All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Awesome. Take two. Mark.
Set up.
And
action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome back. I'm David Moulton.
I'm Penn. What's up?
What's up? It's Avengers week.
David, I want to commend you.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's great how we wrote up this little script. As if there was anything else in the world to talk about besides Endgame. It's cute how you pretend like there's stuff outside of Avengers.
It's going to be a struggle. So just start your timer now. See how quickly we can burn through all this stuff to get to Avengers.
I bet you we could take every single piece of news and find a way to make it relate to Endgame.
Challenge accepted.
I also need to, we need to cover something.
Oh, okay. All right.
You and I watched Avengers together.
Okay,
yeah, So I have two topics I need. First of all, I want to thank you.
No, you're welcome.
You bought me that ticket. You took me through that experience. It was great. I had so much fun waiting in line, holding seats. Oh, no, I got a guy sitting here, you know, all this stuff. It was great. I loved the movie, and I wanted to thank you for buying that ticket and giving me that experience. That was really great.
You're welcome. I'm glad you got to enjoy it.
And we'll talk later about how much we enjoyed the movie itself, but right. I wanted to thank you for doing that. So thank you very much. And then I also, just at the top of the show, we need to cover the first words out of my mouth when this movie was over. I was sitting next to you, and I was watching Endgame, and I looked over at you, and I said, Star Wars doesn't stand a chance. So I just want to let everyone know where I stand on this. I'm gonna stand by my bet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not gonna waffle. I'm not gonna, you know, back out or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to think I'm stupid, because I am no longer entirely confident that Star Wars is going to be the number one movie of the year. I think we have seen the number one movie of the year.
I don't understand how anything could come close, especially since we limited ourselves to the first 4 days.
Right.
Like, I mean, maybe Star Wars will run longer. Probably not, but maybe. But, like, there's no chance. First 4 days.
I think the more interesting question is going to be whether or not Avengers is still running in December when Star Wars comes out. So I just wanted, you know, all our listeners, and we're gonna still track this, and I'm still going to be on Team Star Wars, but I just want you to know I'm officially nervous.
I think you followed up the comment after this, where do we go from here? And I said, what is life even?
Right. Right. There was a lot of deep questions being asked. There was a lot of lost souls. It reminded me of, like, the morning after the Super Bowl, if you're a big football fan, and you're like, well, now what? You know,
just waiting. Right,
right, yeah. Right.
Well, since we're talking about our ultimate wager.
Yes.
You and I did a little spiel, song and pony dance before.
A song and pony dance, yes.
Yeah, before the IMAX opening. And during that time, we polled the audience and their reaction to Avengers and Star Wars. And it was the first time I think I really saw the fear in your eyes. So let's just listen to this. All right.
I believe there was actual. I heard some boos.
Here's the cheer.
Wow.
Everyone's on board.
Yeah.
Star Wars is going to be the biggest movie of the year.
Crickets. Crickets and laughter.
And lots of boos. Like, I wasn't expecting the boos. That's the part that surprised me.
I want to give a shout out to a couple of my guys.
Yeah.
I say that figuratively. I have no idea who they are. They're total strangers. But I love the fact that they came to Avengers in their Star Wars shirts.
Oh, really?
I had a Boba Fett t-shirt, a Darth Vader t-shirt, a Yoda shirt. Right on, brother. Right on.
Nice. Nice. Way to represent.
Good for you. And also, on this same topic, it was interesting. There was a guy dressed up, really good Captain America costume. Not Darren, but another really good guy. And he was talking to me afterwards, and he had a theory, which I thought was kind of interesting. He commented about how Penn Cinema in Lititz was not decked out for Avengers to the extent that we went crazy for Episode 7. And he told me that him and his friend were talking about it and that they had speculated the owner must be a Star Wars guy. So then when he heard us, heard about our bet, he was like, I knew it! I knew it! Has nothing to do with the fact that we were just sort of like, I don't know.
Just looking for something to argue over.
Right.
Wow. All right, well, we can talk about Avengers forever, which
we'll
we will.
To it.
But let's cover some of this Dune
news. I was just thinking, it's been a long time since we had any Dune news.
Yeah, I've been holding back
because
it's been pretty much, even for me, I've been like, I don't even know.
All right.
But look, Jason Momoa shaved his beard and for it, and he's on location.
Listen,
and
I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
I shave my beard every day. Nobody's reporting on this news.
You don't post about it on Instagram. That's the problem. You need to get on that.
Okay, so is this a big deal?
Well, he looks weird without it.
Yeah.
He definitely lost some of his macho.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he'll be fine. Surprisingly.
Think he can swim as well without it?
I don't. Probably not. But they're on location. Filming has begun. And along that, they are now reporting Dune will be 2 movies. The first book will be broken into 2 movies.
That's got to be good news, right?
Yeah, it's Dune is a really heavy story, right? So it almost needs to be. But at the same time, whenever they announce a movie's been cut in two, you're always like, yeah, I mean, I guess.
Well, they cut the final Avengers movie into two.
Well, that's true.
They called the first one Infinity War and the second one Endgame. But it was just one movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, I don't have a problem with it. I know I have a pretty good idea of where they'll cut it apart just from being so familiar with the book. But it's just like, will that be enough for a casual person just walking in and like how jarring will that be or whatever?
But, well, they have some work to do for getting the casual person to know what Dune is.
Yeah, there's that too.
I mean, there's a learning curve there.
Right. As you know, for having the book in your hand but not reading it.
Yes. I have to say, honestly, if I did not know you, I would not know what Dune is, and this movie would not be on my radar.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's just the beauty of knowing me.
That's it, man. One of the many gifts that comes with knowing David Moore. Hey, girl.
Go ahead and cover this one here about the scribe, because I know how you like scribes.
I just like to say scribe. I don't know.
Well, Gary Dauberman?
You're right.
Yeah. He was a writer for It, The Conjuring, Annabelle, and producer James Wan are now developing the first big screen adaptation of Stephen King's vampire novel, Salem's Lot.
I put that on my reading list.
Yeah.
I've not read. Have you read that? Do you read a lot of Stephen King?
I don't. It's something that, I guess, horrible to say this, but since the last It, I've been kind of trying to get into.
Yeah.
And I don't like scary stuff, so even when reading it, I'm kind of like, I don't know how much I want to read this.
Gonna have bad dreams.
Yeah.
Okay, so John Boyega,
mm-hmm.
our man playing Finn, believes that he is done after Rise of Skywalker. Are we thinking that is a, I don't want to use the word spoiler, but I mean, are we thinking that something awful happens to his character in Rise of Skywalker, or is this just a malcontent actor?
This is a weird one, right? Because this came out, and then later in the week, what's her face, the head of like the Kevin Feige of the Star Wars.
Okay.
She was like, oh, I see more Star Wars movies going on with the new characters. And so I'm like, wait a minute. But he said he was done. I wonder if it's a promotional type thing. Like,
just a cheap headline?
Yeah, because I feel like we heard Chris Evans say this about Captain America like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, anyway. But it just, you know, every movie's like, oh, I might be done Captain America after this one or whatever. Or even Robert Downey Jr.
Daniel Craig said it about Bond earlier.
Right.
A few films ago.
It's an easy way to get yourself into the headlines, I guess.
I don't like it. I mean, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm just saying, if that's... I like actors who get in the headlines because their performances on screen are so great.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Or because they took on an interesting project.
Yeah. Or because they talk to us.
Right. Podcast at PennCinema.com. If you're listening, Daisy Ridley.
Speaking of Daisy Ridley, she and Tom Holland had a sci-fi movie, and it's so chaotic, called Chaos Walking, that they're saying it's unreleasable.
I don't believe that. You want to know why I don't believe that?
Why?
Because somebody found a way to release Heckboy. If you can release Hellboy, you can release anything with Daisy Ridley in it. Not to mention Tom Holland. But, I mean, if the film was Daisy Ridley sitting in a chair reading the phone book, I would go watch it.
Yeah, but...
And I love chaos. I'm a big fan.
Oh.
So, Daisy Ridley, Tom Holland, chaos, all three of those elements, this film's got to be better than Hellboy.
The other day, I didn't watch anything, and it was better than Hellboy.
I have to tell you something. I did something I normally... I feel a little bit guilty that I didn't speak up.
Uh-oh.
I was talking to a customer in the lobby who had just seen Avengers.
Yeah.
He was all excited about it. And we stood there talking long enough that we got talking about other films.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he wanted to come in and see Hellboy because it was only playing once a day, because that's what movies do when they're on their way out. So he was saying he could tell it was on its way out. And I feel guilty because I was kind of like just nodding and smiling politely. And what I should have said is like, dude, save yourself. I should have like quoted you and told him about your experience. But instead, I just sort of smiled and said, oh, yeah, it's not going to be here much longer, blah, blah, blah. And I feel guilty. And I can't even remember who I was talking to. But I'll just tell you, if you're listening, I'm sorry that I didn't flag you off.
Here's what you do. If you don't want to say anything bad, just be like, hey. We covered that on the podcast.
Ooh, that's what I should start getting in the habit of.
Just check it out, you know? And then this way, you know, they can get the bad news later. Maybe after they've seen it.
Or it would be great if they wrote us at podcast@penncinema.com and they're like, hey, Penn, thanks a lot for not warning me about how bad Hellboy sucks.
Oh, man. Hey, Tom and Jerry. We've talked about this movie before.
Yeah.
And you're beyond pumped.
Yes. I actually am.
Hey, who knows what it'll be?
David.
It's Tom and Jerry.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Your
my
girl.
My girl from Greta. Remember Greta?
Movie
oh,
of the year.
Greta. I saw Greta. Definitely saw Greta.
Saw Greta. Almost twice.
Almost twice. That's a great line. Almost twice. Hey, Penn, did you ever see Greta? I almost saw it twice. Okay. So I have a new opinion about this whole topic.
Okay.
All Scooby-Doo.
Uh-huh.
Tom and Jerry.
Mighty Mouse, right?
Mouse.
No, Danger Mouse.
No, it was Mighty Mouse.
Okay.
And now I see they added Wile E. Coyote versus Acme.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So not even the Roadrunner.
Well, I got to assume the Roadrunner's in there,
okay.
But maybe it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my point. Two things. First of all, as much as we love to joke about Greta, Chloe Grace Moretz, we've always been fans of hers.
Right, right.
We didn't love Greta, but
her acting was not the problem.
Her acting was not the problem, and actors and actresses make sometimes, I don't want to say bad choices. Right. You know, I'm sure maybe she had a good reason for it. Maybe
Nicolas Cage.
Maybe. David, I'm trying to say something. I actually... Look at Nicolas Cage. Jesus. I'm trying to talk over here.
Valid point. I'm sorry. Go on.
Fair. Okay. So first of all, I like that she's involved because I do trust her despite, you know, Greta notwithstanding. I like her in the Tom and Jerry cast. I like that they have a plot. You know, somebody bought a hotel and they need Tom to get rid of the mouse, you know, and chaos will ensue. I don't know if chaos will walk, but it will definitely ensue. So you have Space Jam, Tom and Jerry, Wile E. Coyote, Scooby-Doo, Mighty Mouse. This starts to feel, and they're all under the Warner Brothers family.
Mm.
This starts to feel like, and don't freaking kill me, but I'm saying it starts to feel a little bit like a cartoon universe.
Whoa.
We just saw a movie that wrapped up 22 movies from a certain universe. And I'm not trying to compare these great cartoons to Marvel by any stretch. But is Warner Brothers preparing or beginning to sort of go down a lane of beloved comic cartoons the same way Marvel went down the lane of beloved comic book characters? You know, is this going to... And I don't want to try to overstate it. I'm certainly not trying to compare Iron Man to Scooby-Doo. You know what I mean? Captain America to Coyote, or Thanos to Coyote, I guess would be the analogy there. But, like, they're two totally different worlds. But the fact that Warner Brothers has sort of a theme going,
yeah,
gives me some trust, gives me some confidence that they're taking these shows seriously, these movies. And if they can make them like what they did, I forget, did they do Chipmunks? I keep coming back to Chipmunks, but I'm starting to think Fox maybe released Chipmunks. But anyway, if Warner Brothers can do these cartoons and sort of have some consistency and have some quality to them, this could end up being really exciting. And all of these cartoons I loved watching growing up. The next title I want them to announce, Josie and the Pussycats. Remember that one?
Yeah.
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 So anyway, so it's a little throwaway piece of news, but to me, I wonder if there's more going on at Warner Brothers.
Here's my thing, right? Hear me out. I hear what you're saying.
Nicolas Cage.
How can we
next
get him
involved? Next time you're trying to say something, I'm going to just blurt out Nicolas Cage.
Okay. All right. So
how can we get him involved? Nicolas Cage would be great. You know, he would be the old man in Scooby-Doo.
Perfect.
And I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you rascally kids, you nosy kids.
He would play every villain in every Scooby-Doo movie. I hear what you're saying. It's a great idea.
Okay.
But I don't know if I have room for this in my heart unless it's Hanna-Barbera and it leads up to Ooh. Wacky Racers.
Oh, my God.
Right? I mean, if talk about a 22-film build-up.
Wow.
And then you got Wacky Racers.
Wow.
I mean, how cool would that be?
You just blew my mind.
All right.
I'm blown. This is...
Hanna-Barbera, get on board with Nicolas Cage.
I can't go on. I'm done. That's brilliant. How are you not running a movie studio?
I don't know. I don't. Too many ideas.
Add it to the list of mysteries. Like why I don't have a record contract. Yeah. Why don't I have a record deal?
Exactly. Oh, man. Wow. Okay. So I think the last thing we got on here. There's two more things. So last week we talked about The Invisible Man, yes, and Elizabeth Moss.
And we thought it would be, I said, I thought it would be great if Elizabeth Moss played The Invisible Man.
Right, and we were on board with that. But then this week she comes out and she says, no, she's not playing The Invisible Man in the upcoming movie, The Invisible Man. No word on Nicolas Cage's involvement.
We talked last week about this, and I'm not trying to get too deep or whatever, but I sort of said like I thought it would be cool for a female to play Invisible Lead.
I think a lot of people were on board with that.
And have her be the lead and not change a title, not make it The Invisible Woman, but have it The Invisible Man. And I think the studio, and we'll get to the new Men in Black International trailer soon, mm-hmm, but they have a little of that same thought process in their trailer where Thor says, "We are Men in Black," and then he turns around to Tessa Thompson and says, "Men... And women in black," you know. But I think it's kind of funny how they like have that little nod in there. Mm-hmm. So she confirmed, Elizabeth Moss, getting back to The Invisible Man, confirmed that she is not, in fact, playing The Invisible Man. Do we know who is?
I don't think we do as of yet.
Okay.
So it would be great if it was played by no one. Like you never see the person who goes invisible as a person the entire time. Oh, they never speak. It's just
the invisible mute man. Boy, you're gonna save a lot of money on that salary.
They can just hire someone off the street to go to the premieres and be like, "It was me." <You know?
laughs> Speaking of casting, we got some big news for Bond. I'm not trying to abruptly move on, but I felt like that was getting to ridiculousness.
No. Oh, yeah, for sure.
One of my favorite franchises of all time is Bond. Mm-hmm. We opened up the Lititz location in 06 with Casino Royale. Mm. And Daniel Craig is my personally favorite Bond. He's getting in a little hot water. He was accused. Today there was an article out of London that there's concern that he wants too much artistic control over the new, what'd you call it, the shattered hand or something?
Smashed hand.
Smashed hand. He wants too much artistic control because he wants Bond to be politically correct. What's your thought on that?
Well, my first thing I think is calm down, Edward Norton.
Right. You know who's really politically correct? Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage. I don't know. I mean, so I've spoken about it before. I've been rewatching the Bond movies with a group, and they are so not politically correct and so not well treating of women.
Right.
It's like, the history of the series does not bode well. So I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
But I don't know how I feel about it. If he really wants these things, I think and he can really push for them and make it work, I'm all for it. But,
well, a former Bond girl,
yeah,
whose name I forget, was quoted as saying, "Why can't the next James Bond be a woman?
Why not?
Jamie Bond coming Jamie at Bond. You. Theaters near you this summer."
If they pick the right actress, it could be great. Not Halle Berry.
Eva Green.
Uh-huh.
Tell me, Eva Green as James Bond. Oh my God, Jamie, I'd buy my ticket now.
Jamie Bond. Nicolas Cage. 007. You knew I was going there.
Nicolas Cage gets a sex change and performs as the first woman James Bond. Typical. But there was casting news for the new Bond movie, and the one that caught my eye, Rami Malek.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? Isn't he new to the franchise, or in my mind, I feel like he was maybe in one of the earlier ones.
I think he's new.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's new.
I love him.
He is great.
I watched that incredibly weird movie. What was the name of it? I think I was telling you about The Mal Heart or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
on Netflix. Mm-hmm. That movie was so strange and yet wonderful.
Yeah.
He's another one that if the movie was him reading the phone book, I'd go watch it.
Right.
Fascinating.
What if him and Daisy Ridley read the phone book together?
To each other.
As a duet.
Sign me up. All right.
So any other big names on that, though?
There were, but none that I
saw a lot of returning people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good.
Do we think this is Daniel Craig's last? I thought Daniel Craig was doing like Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and whatever that third one was. I thought those were his three, Skyfall.
Well, he did four, though, already.
I know, but I'm saying, like, I thought he was going to do three, but then once he blew past three, like, why should he? Where are we on? His fifth or sixth now?
This
something
will be
like
five,
that?
Five, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why stop at five? Do like Johnny Depp and
he doesn't want to do them anymore.
Do we believe that, though? Didn't we just go through that with John Boyega?
Yeah. But in the last one, it felt like he didn't want to do it anymore.
Ooh. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the last movie, not that it was. What was the last one called? The one with Blofeld in it.
I forget.
See? Bingo. It wasn't even like.
Bingo Bongo.
Yeah, it wasn't even the biggest outstanding one. And I remember watching it and being like, he feels like he wants to be done.
Yeah.
Like Skyfall was his modus operandi.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, anyway.
Okay, we got three really good trailers.
Right. There may have been more this week, but there's too much to talk about, so just these three. Gemini Man. This one surprised me a little bit.
How so?
I didn't think I was going to be as interested as I am from the synopsis. I didn't think it was going to look visually as well as it looks.
Yeah.
Here we have a premise is Will Smith is a dope killer, and they cloned him, and they send the clone to kill older Will Smith. But neither of them know about each other until they go for like the kill. The visual effect of young Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, amazing. And then secondly, the fact that like he. I almost wonder if it's even him playing his younger self.
Right.
Because he acts so much like I remember Will Smith acting when he was younger. And it's so very different from the way Will Smith acts now Like, he is more refined, and like his acting yeah. actions feel like they have purpose. And where his younger self, just the way he's playing the character seems way more chaotic.
Yeah.
And like just fishing around for what he's supposed to be doing. I don't know how else to explain it. I don't know if the movie will actually be good. That's the big thing, because I feel like these kind of things can go either way.
I think it will, and I have two reasons why.
Okay.
It's only one reason, but it's two words.
Nicolas Cage.
No. Ang Lee.
Okay.
He's a director, and he's a stud. He makes good freaking movies, in my opinion.
Let me just...
Oh, no. Did I forget a bad movie?
Let me just hold on a second. I'm just going to throw this.
Yeah.
The Hulk. They're not all good.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right,
but otherwise I agree. Ang Lee usually does really good stuff.
All right, Ang Lee is the reason I'm excited about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm not excited about this movie is because a lot of times when they do cutesy stuff like this, where they have two actor or one actor playing two roles in the same movie, there was a great gangster movie where Tom Hardy played twins. I think it was called Legend or Legends or something like that. It was freaking brilliant. It's a great movie. But the whole time I'm watching, any time there's the one actor playing two roles, I fail to really get lost in the movie because I'm always thinking about how that scene was done, or isn't this interesting? It's himself, and isn't that funny? And, you know, like just I find it distracting, you know, to have one actor play two parts in the same movie. And I feel like the young Will Smith looks so much like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You're like looking for Uncle Phil to show up, you know? Like, so I'm a little nervous about being distracted. I'm also nervous because Will Smith has not had like a great – he's been on a little bit of a – as Chris Berman would say on ESPN, he's been on the schneid a little bit.
Mm.
You know, he's been on a tough run as far as I remember. So that's why I'm nervous. I'm excited because I like Ang Lee. And the trailer's cool. I mean, the trailer looks cool. He's riding his motorcycle over a roof and then throws it at the other Will Smith.
Right. Typical Will Smith.
Right. Classic. Classic stuff. So I don't know. And I'm open-minded to it, but I'm like you. I have some things to make me excited, some things to make me reserved. Overall, I thought the trailer was cool. It's definitely worth the 2.5 minutes to watch it.
Yeah. I think I'm technically excited more than I am excited for the movie.
Yeah.
So... All right, this next one might be my trailer of the week.
Woo!
I think it might be.
My God.
It's Godzilla, King of Monsters, final trailer. This movie is probably going to be bad. All right? I'm opening up with that. I mean, the last Godzilla was just okay to me. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was bad. I just was like, okay. I mean, like, it was fine. This one's got Godzilla fighting like 7 other monsters, and this trailer has a lot of the monster-on-monster action that like is what I want to see, and that's why I liked this trailer a lot, just because seeing King Ghidorah choking Godzilla with one neck and breathing fire on him with his other two heads,
what could be better?
What could be better? I don't care one lick about the humans in this movie. So I just don't care about that story. But I really like the visuals. Thoughts?
I have a question and a comment.
Yeah.
Let's get you on record.
Mm-hmm.
What's your position on Kong Skull Island?
I never saw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I loved Kong.
I need to see it because the next movie is Godzilla vs. King Kong.
Yeah.
Because they're in the same universe.
Right. I did not love the first Godzilla movie.
Right.
I loved King Kong.
Okay.
I think it was called Kong Skull Island. So you need to watch Kong Skull Island.
Okay.
I really thought it was great. And my favorite part of that whole movie was, I think I have it correct. Isn't it Samuel L. Jackson? Isn't Nick Fury leading the airplanes into that storm to get to Skull Island? And while they're going through that storm, he is narrating about how Prometheus flew too close to the sun. And his wings melted and he dropped to his death. But our wings are not made out of wax. They're made out of United States of America steel that we bonded together and made these planes. It's legit.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a great scene, a great monologue. And then if just as he's getting to the peak of his sort of pep talk, they come bursting through the other sides into this clear, beautiful island where obviously there could be no 100-story-tall monsters waiting to eat you.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously. It's way too pretty. But anyway, so I liked Kong, and therefore I'm open-minded about Godzilla. Here's the bad thing. Remember a number of episodes ago when I complained about a certain trailer and I said I don't have enough minutes in the day to just throw my minutes around?
Yeah.
I could not watch the entire Godzilla trailer.
What?
It's your trailer of the week. I fast-forwarded it. I clicked the little thing and drug it to see how the end of the trailer.
Wow. You don't care about monster on monster action.
It sounds dirty when you say it like that. Yeah, it makes me feel uncomfortable. But the best part about watching a monster movie is, in my opinion, is watching it on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing that's good about Kong and Godzilla and stuff is watching it on a 40-foot screen and really taking in the cinematography, the rain, the dark, blah, blah, blah. Watching it on a computer screen, like, I'm like, whatever. You know, Now, I will say the best part of the trailer, in my opinion, is when the two guys, and I think they're famous actors, but I forget their names. The one, they're obviously the main characters that you care nothing about. The one says, "My God." And in perfect timing, the other guy goes, "Zilla." Oh my God, as soon as I saw that I was like, this movie is awful. And I can't wait to see it.
it's gonna be bad.
This movie is a classic case of, I'm not saying the movie's gonna be good, but it's gonna be perfect to see in a movie theater. And like, if I'm not busy, if I have a little window, I'm psyched to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not gonna make plans around seeing it. I'm not carving out time out of my schedule. But I think this is the kind of movie that's going to be a ton of fun, you know, to get some Twizzlers and a large popcorn and sit in the movie theater and watch it on the big screen. So that's my position. I'm like, whatever. But from now on, whenever I hear somebody say God, I'm going to say Zilla. I want to know who wrote that line.
They need a whole movie.
Who
just
came up with that gem?
Final trailer we got for this week.
This is my favorite trailer of the week. Men in Black International Trailer 2, and I've been, I don't know, on the fence or whatever, Men in Black International, I'm like, okay, whatever. This trailer, now officially I'm on board, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
This trailer did it for me, I watched the whole thing. I love the fact that they have the Avengers cast starring in this. They got Thor and Valkyrie in there, Tessa Thompson. So, yeah, I think this movie looks great.
I do too. I think when I was watching the trailer, this trailer specifically, I thought, you know, I feel like this is the time to make more Men in Black movies. Like, like what we're capable of doing in a movie is now where it needs to be for this idea to work again. Whereas I'm like, I don't think I saw a third one. I know I didn't see the third one. And I can't remember the second one.
Yeah.
But it's like, the first one was amazing. At the time, it was like amazing. But then, like, the shtick kind of wore down, and I don't think visually they could do all their ideas, right?
Right.
And now we can do that. And some of the stuff looks fantastic, like the graphics and stuff just look really cool. The comedy bits in this were great. And some of it's not even, like, that big of a comedy thing. Like, the one, Tessa Thompson's like, oh, I'm gonna drive. And she goes, in the car, but they're in England, so the she's like, steering wheel should be here. Right. And he's like, not in this country.
Not in this country.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. You don't really realize this, but looking back on the Avengers movies and watching this trailer and some of the other pieces, Chris Hemsworth has really good comic timing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a funny dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was watching something today, actually, and they were talking about how funny he is and how they beefed up his comedy in the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And they were saying, you know, he probably got chosen for his role as Thor because he was beefy and looked the part. And as it went on, they were like, oh, wait, this guy's got great comedic timing.
Yeah.
Like, let's play into that. And they just kept playing it up to what we have now.
The rabbit is right.
we can stop. We're gonna go right into Avengers stuff.
Oh, right.
So this, I don't know. It was a hard contention for me to choose between the two trailers. My 5-year-old self chose Godzilla. So over Men in Black. I'm sorry.
Wait, your five-year-old self, is there any other self?
There's a six-year-old version.
The grown-up six-year-old version. Yeah. I love when you talk to kids and they're like 10 years old and they talk about like, when I was a kid, when I was little.
Exactly. All right. So, I don't know if you know this or not, but Avengers Endgame came out this week.
Is that this week already?
Yeah. Before we start talking about this experience, and before we start talking about the movie,
yeah,
let's talk about the effects it had on the movie-going experience. What was it like here this week?
Oh, it was... this was one of, well, I mean, I'm sure you everyone read the same headlines. Avengers accounted for 90% of movie going in America this week. So normally a top movie, you know, often the number one movie, you know, if it's really big, it does 25-30% of the total movie going. But this movie just, it was insane. I've never seen anything like it, how desperately people were searching for tickets. You know, and I think it's because every theater in the country, and certainly every theater in Lancaster County and central Pennsylvania, has converted to recliners. And therefore, the seat count in America is now about half of what it used to be. So, you know, to get tickets to a 7 p.m. show, there used to be 250 seats, and now there's 125. So it was insane because, first of all, everybody in the world wants to see this movie. Second of all, a lot of theaters have fewer seats than they used to. So the result was, as theater operators, we just kept throwing more and more showtimes up. And every time we put a showtime up, it sold out, you know, and we had just people calling. And I had a guy, an older guy, say to me that he must have been doing something wrong because on the website, it looked like all the shows were sold out. And he said, I've been going to the movies for 40 years and I've never seen this sold out like this. And I was like, buddy, you've never seen anything like this ever. Forget 40 years.
Yeah.
So I know that at least a year ago, if not longer, I was telling people that 2019 was going to be a historic year. I still believe it, even though the first quarter was a waste of time. but I believe that 2019 is going to be the biggest year in the history of the movies. I correctly predicted that either Avengers or Star Wars, but now it's clear that Avengers would be the number one movie of all time. And I think that that leads me to say the word that I kept using this weekend was historic. Mm-hmm. I kept telling the kids that work here, you should take pride in what you do this weekend and work hard because you're going to be talking about this weekend forever. Mm-hmm. This is one of those weekends we're going to be reflecting on, you know, in 30 years when you're telling people you worked at a movie theater back then. People say, oh, were you around for Avengers? I know guys in the movie business who still talk about when they opened Titanic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was at the time such a big deal. To me, this is of historic proportion.
So yesterday, we were recording on Sunday, so on Saturday of this last week, I have a buddy who was like, my girlfriend's out of town. I guess I should do something. I want to see Avengers. And I was like, you didn't plan for this? And he's like, no, I didn't know. Is there anyone who wants to go? And I was like, well, I mean, I'll go, but can we find a place?
You're a good friend.
Yeah, and it was a hard sacrifice for me.
There's nothing you won't do for your friends.
That's right. But here's the thing. So he lives like an hour away from me. And so we were like, we've got a slew of theaters, possibilities we could go to. What can we do?
Right.
We couldn't find two seats together. We could find seats. Just not together.
Right.
And then they were almost always like front row. And then we came across our boys at the New Main.
Whoa, the New Main in Ephrata, Pennsylvania. Downtown Ephrata.
Yep.
Woo!
Whole front row.
Whoa.
Wide open when I got tickets. Center and front row.
Yeah, man.
And I was like, you ready for this? Like, I don't know what the situation is going to be like. First off, shout out, that theater was amazing for front row. It was like being at home. The TV is like 4 feet away from you, but you can still see everything.
Yeah.
You know? It was amazing, and we were both like, oh, that was great. But and then that whole row was filled out, too. So it was crazy that we found seats. And I can't believe that everywhere was so booked. The only openings in most theaters that I looked at were the handicap spots.
And the other thing that was remarkable, I mean, the IMAX auditorium in Lititz is gigantic, 450 420 seats. That sold out all weekend long. Like,
wow.
Just one. Like, it's not at all unusual for us to sell out IMAX for the opening show of a large blockbuster. On the really large blockbusters, we'll also sell out the next show, like the 10 a.m. or I'm sorry, like the 10 p.m. show. And then would typically sell out like the Friday night and Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
This movie was selling out IMAX, 410 seats, all weekend long.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. I mean, the only way to properly put this movie into perspective is that it was a historic weekend in the movie business.
Right. Wow.
It's awesome.
If you haven't seen this movie, what's your problem? Because get ready. Spoilers from here on out. Check the time codes in the notes. We'll say when we get done if we're going to talk about anything else. But spoilers for Avengers from here on. Penn, I mean, did you like this movie?
I was organizing my thoughts, and I was trying to think, like, there's just so much to discuss. Like,
really?
There's the movie itself. Mm-hmm. There's the plot. I want to talk about the music. The mm-hmm. soundtrack to this movie was ridiculous. From start to end, perfection.
I didn't know what you were thinking because it starts off with the song playing, I can't even remember the name, when the Marvel credits are rolling.
That's Dear Mr. Fantasy by Stevie Winwood.
Right, and you looked over at me and I couldn't tell from your expression if you were like, what is this? Or if you were like, what is this?
The second one. Yeah.
And I got that later. But at the time, I was like, I don't know what he's getting at here.
This, but. I mean, just in case there's some people that might not know the lyrics to this song,
mm-hmm.
Dear Mr. Fantasy, a lot of people know the chorus, but let's just break that down for a second. So this is the opening Marvel credits when they do that comic book flip through the red Marvel, which, by the way, by the time they got done flipping it, it was black and silver. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, they typically the colors for that are that beautiful Marvel red,
mm-hmm.
and they set the tone for this because it was just after Hawkeye's whole family, you know, disappeared, and sort of setting the tone, carrying the tone over from the end of Infinity War. But what was brilliant about this song choice is the lyric that says, "Please don't be sad. If it was the straight life you had, we wouldn't have known you all these years." And that, to me, really ties in like a nod to the whole 11-year history of all these movies, you know, and all the weirdness and all the, you know, like, hey, like the Iron Man concept. Like, he could have just been a nice, rich, military weaponizing guy, you know. And as screwed up as things are now, don't be sad. Because if you had just played it safe, we wouldn't have known you all these years. I just thought it gives me chills now just talking about it. The selection for that song choice on the opening sequence was just perfect and set the tone. And then all the way through to the end when Captain Marvel is dancing with his wife. And Captain America dancing with his wife. And they have that old-timey sort of 1920s type of...
I love that song.
I love the song, and the use of it is perfection, just absolutely brilliant. And to me, those two bookends, you know, the sound is so important in a movie like that. I've talked to you about how much I love John Williams and his work on Star Wars and stuff like that. So whoever was in charge of sort of putting together this whole soundtrack, just, I mean, that's an A+. Doing all right. Everything else about the movie was also awesome.
Yeah.
But to me, that just tied it all together.
One of these days... we'll have to cover synesthesia and movies and talk about my experience. But I totally agree. Audibly, this movie, super on point. I don't even know what else to say. The scores, it wasn't like it was like Guardians of the Galaxy where everything was super memorable.
Right.
But there was no point where the music didn't fit or add to a scene, in my opinion. The ultimate battle at the end, just the way the swelling of the music and the Avengers tune hitting just
right,
or even during the credits when they're doing like the signatures, and it's like it's leading up to like the full Avengers thing, but then it doesn't really hit it until the Iron Man, which has a little bit more because he started it all, a little bit more stuff to his like thing, and it's just like, oh man, so good.
He started it all, and I'm of the opinion, I think we all agree, but maybe we don't, I'd love to hear somebody, maybe Pirate Dave has an opinion about this. The audio cue at the end, because we can't really call it a stinger. It's more like just an audio cue.
Right.
At the very, very, very end, is that not Iron Man in his cave clanking away? I recorded a little clip of Iron Man doing that in his cave. And if you pull the music out of that clip, to me, it's the exact same sound. So I think that what that does, which is yet another of the many brilliant, subtle things that the Russo brothers did, was that officially puts Iron Man's stamp on the conclusion. And I know you said that Spider-Man Far From Home is technically the end of this phase, and I don't really know what phase means, but to me, this is the end of, you know, the 11-year run. And for it to end with the sound of Iron Man in his cave, or I should say Tony Stark in his cave, you know, banging away on his face mask, I think that's perfect. I thought that was great. I was glad they didn't have a stinger because it leaves open so many options.
Right. It also makes it feel more finished.
Right.
Yeah. But technically, Spider-Man is the end of this phase. So the movies are go in phases, and they're supposed to cover, like, story arcs? Question mark? And supposedly, Spider-Man is the end of this phase and not Avengers Endgame. Which is weird to me.
So does that mean that we're going to see some of these Avengers in Spider-Man? Obviously not Iron Man.
No. Potentially. We could. I think what it really means is that rather than end the phase on something so finite, I think they're going to have... Spider-Man is going to be its own thing, but also serve as a filler slash primer for whatever's next. I think whatever is coming next will be either hinted at least in the stinger, or there will be a MacGuffin that leads into the next.
When Spider-Man burst into the battle scene having been snapped back to life, the audience went crazy.
Dude.
I know that you know that because we were sitting next to each other, and it was great to see the audience cheer so loud. I mean, they cheered for all every as they brought back each character, there was cheers. And when Spidey came slinging back into the battle, man, place went nuts.
Yeah.
And can we talk for a real quick second? I don't know if we've done justice to the Spider-Man trailer, the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer, because the one that's running ahead of Avengers is really cool. I'm so psyched for Spider-Man, and I just think it's going to be, I think it's going to be really great.
It'd be interesting to see how they handle it. The trailer is very happy-go-lucky in like their personal life. It'll be interesting to see how they handle people reacting to being brought back and all that stuff.
I think that the storyline between Tony Stark and Spider-Man, I mean, that is so touching.
It is. It really is.
And the flip side, it's the same coin, but the storyline of Tony Stark seeing his father on the military base, that was beautiful too.
Okay, here's... All right, okay. We've got so much to talk about, but I just want to, since we're talking about this.
Dive in.
All right. So we got Tony and Peter and that relationship going on, right?
Right.
And then there was a character that all of us were like, who is this guy?
The kid from,
It was a kid from Iron Man 3.
Are we sure?
I'm pretty sure I've seen that other people confirming it. So we're going to go with that. Kid from Iron Man 3.
Okay. We're talking just in case listeners aren't aware. The conversation when they were scanning all of those people at the funeral, there's a tall kid, and everybody in our row was looking around going, who's that?
Yeah, and the people in front of us were like, oh, it's a kid from Iron Man 3. And I think that he's actually, earlier in the movie, I think when Ant-Man says, what happened here, I think that's also him on the bike.
Oh, yeah. So are you thinking that he can appear in Far From Home?
No, what I'm getting at is he had that, like, fatherly thing going on with him and emphasizing it so much with Peter, and then still having that character there kind of diminished, like it just didn't seem
so. You didn't like that?
Not that I didn't like it, I just
unnecessary.
Yeah, it didn't really hit home for me or
anything. I didn't like it because every other character that was on the dock at the funeral was significant,
right? And here is this character that we didn't know who he was.
Although it does, It is like if you've ever been to a funeral, like, you know, there's always like the family and the circle of friends, and there's always like whispering, like, who's that dude over there?
Right? Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Yeah. I'm sure that's not what they were intending, and I'm sure there's a significance to him being there, but it was completely lost on me, and whatever. It was, it was whatever.
Right. So we were talking about the ending. The big battle scene. Let's talk about like emotional swings in this movie. A lot of it happened at the end for me. I mean, there were things that were throughout it, but like, man, when they're getting beat up hardcore by Thanos, and then Sam's like, on your left, and boom, they start coming through the portals, and it's just like, they got me with the throwback, on your left.
Yeah.
Because they had done the on the left thing earlier with Iron Man and Thor when he was like slightly on your left or whatever with the vacuum.
Right.
And he was swaying as he was walking. man, that was a really hard hit. So many parts of that end battle were just like clinchers for me.
But what do you think about the whole thing? Not at any one particular part of the movie, but the whole storyline between Captain America and Tony Stark sort of making amends and reconciling and sort of, do you buy that? Was that well done? Because it seemed like, didn't that, am I remembering that correctly? You've seen the movie twice. I've only seen it once. So I definitely need to go back and sharpen my perspective. But it felt like it was sort of start and stop a little bit at the beginning. Am I remembering that correctly?
So, okay. I guess having watched Infinity War so recently helped with that.
Yeah.
A lot. Because in Infinity War, they don't meet.
Right.
At all.
Right.
So there's no resolution there.
Right.
Like, he's thinking about calling him, and that's when the attack starts, and they don't. So there's zero communication. Tony has no idea what Captain America went through on Earth.
Right.
And the big battle. And so he gets back from space, and he's, to him, it's like Cap never showed up.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he's like, you know, where were you, blah, blah, blah. Then he goes off and does his, Iron Man's not with them when they go kill Thanos.
Right.
So that whole thing. And then it's 5 years later. So you have to imagine they kill Thanos, and then like everyone's probably depresso, and he just goes home and does his family thing, and they probably don't communicate.
So I thought that was awesome, the whole lake thing.
Yeah,
with Morgan, isn't that the kid's name?
Mm-hmm.
Morgan. Yeah.
And then when they meet up with him again, like, he, it's not like, it's just, it's a, this hard resentment, because he even says, if you don't talk shop,
yeah, you can save lunch if you don't talk shop.
Yeah. So like, it's not like, I hate you so much I can't stand your guts, but it is like, I don't like you anymore.
Right.
I don't want to tolerate you. I'm still mad with you for this thing. But then when he comes back, when he figures it out, they have that moment outside that's...
You're talking about when he gives him the shield out of his trunk and he says, I had to get out of the garage before Morgan went sledding with it.
Yeah, yeah, but before that, he's like, I hate resentment. It eats away at you or whatever.
Yeah.
And they both... It's just this very mature thing of like, we need to move past this. Like,
yeah.
They both kind of agree nothing's been solved, like,
yeah,
but like, they've got to keep going.
Right.
I thought that was a very mature way to look at like adult relationships and problems.
What do you know about adult relationships?
Well, when I turned 7.
What I know about adult relationships is from what I've seen on movies.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I thought, I mean, to me, it didn't bother. It felt realistic to me, and it didn't bother.
Yeah.
And it kind of drove home a little bit more his sacrifice at the end.
Right.
You know, I felt like that Pepper was a little more reserved than I would have expected in that situation, but it still kind of, the second time around, it worked a little bit better for me than the first time.
I thought the whole thing, you know, again, having seen it once, I thought that whole storyline was really well done. I was really... Yeah. Happy with how that, there was no cheesy hug or no sort of,
right.
I felt like it was really well done and very balanced.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
That just popped one of okay. I have very few issues with this movie. One, the boy doesn't make any sense. The Iron Man 3 boy.
Right.
Second one, Rhodey loses his Iron Man suit and they're drowning underwater.
Right.
Right? And then Ant-Man goes and saves them.
Right.
And then Rhodey has this really slick looking cool suit out of nowhere. Mm. Like, in the moment, you just roll past it. But then the more you think of it, you're like, wait a minute, what? Where? Huh?
So here's the thing.
It doesn't matter.
First of
all, you're going to tell me it doesn't matter.
First of all, it doesn't matter. Second of all, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But third of all, I will say, I think you know this, my favorite Avenger is Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Always has been. I loved that first movie. That got me completely turned on to Marvel. I've always been all about Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr., brilliant. Have a lot of reasons why that's my favorite character. With that being said, every Iron Man movie I've ever watched, I've been annoyed by the fact that whatever situation he ends up in, his suit automatically is like perfectly equipped at for just exactly that. you know, like it just, that's something that you have to get over. You know, you just like we're kidding around here saying like it doesn't matter. You have to sort of get over that. But yeah, I hear you. Like even in Iron Man 3 where he's drowning, you know, they blow up his house and he falls into the water and he's drowning. I'm talking about Iron Man, not Rhodey. And his glove like pops off and then turns around and grabs him and then pulls him out like to safety. Like, oh my God. Okay. Like, all right.
I get it.
Yeah. So I think that like, I totally hear what you're saying, but we've gotten to this point after 22 of these movies, we sort of have to be okay with stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Okay, so there are things that I think won't.
And by the way, just for the record, I have the same complaint about James Bond.
Yeah.
At the beginning of every movie, they show him some watch, you know, that like, hey, if you're trapped in a broom closet on a 14th floor, this is perfectly equipped to swing down to the 8th floor. You know what I mean?
It's only good in this one weird situation.
Right, which now you're guaranteed to be in about an hour and a half.
Yeah. So there are certain things about this movie that I wonder how they'll hold up in the long run.
Well, we had a really interesting, yet brief, but I think it says everything about this movie.
Yeah.
If the question is, was this the best Marvel movie? I think the answer is yes. But then the next question is it the best movie? Like, period.
No.
Like, if it's the best Marvel movie, I think it's an easy yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the best movie, like standing alone on its own, is it the best movie? I don't know if it is because so much of what makes this movie great is the culmination of the baggage, the history of all those previous films that you bring to the table when you watch it. So I feel like it's almost like, I don't want to say cheating, but I think it's like a real crowd pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
You know how chefs, have you ever heard this where a chef says like using too much salt or too much sugar or whatever, like that's cheating because everybody loves salt and sugar. You know, it's like easy.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is like that. You know, it's so good because there's just tons and tons of sugar in it. But as its own movie, I think it struggles. That sounded too harsh, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of like the big points in this one. Like, how'd you feel about the time travel?
I was fine with it. I was fine with it. And I'll tell you the reason why I was fine with it was because, and I really do appreciate it when movies do this. In the movie, they made fun of it.
Yeah.
Like, I forget which character said it, but he's like, so the whole thing hinges on Back to the Future.
Yeah. Right? Tony Stark says that.
Right. And they're like zinging out all these movies. And then they're zinging out Hot Tub Time Machine. like every movie that ever had time travel, they're throwing that out there. And then was it in this movie or Infinity War? It was Infinity War where Iron Man says, kid, if you have one more pop culture reference, I'm going to throw you out the window or, you know, whatever like that. So I'm okay with the time travel because I feel like, first of all, they gave the audience the nod to acknowledge that we know this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then second of all, they didn't waste much time on it, but they gave you a shred of Tony Stark figuring it out. You know, so in other words, it's not like they just sort of said like, oh, this is a thing and now we're going to travel back in time. But they gave you the opportunity to believe that Tony Stark somehow tweaked, you know, some when he was in the lake house, you know, and which, by the way, are we supposed to believe that he's on vacation in this lake house where all he does is play with his kids, and yet he has this incredible computer, you know, Jarvis type of situation at his fingertips. So you're completely retired and hanging out at the lake, but you still have all your cool stuff in case you need to figure out time travel.
Right, just in case.
Right. So, yeah, I was okay with that because, first of all, I felt like they made fun of it, and second of all, because they gave you a shred, just a tiny – that's all I needed was a little shred of believability.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was fine. I thought the payoff was
– they handled the – like with that whole scene where I forget his name, but Ant-Man is – you know, coming back in all the wrong ages. And then at the end, he's like, somebody peed in my suit. I don't know if it was baby me or old man me, but.
Hulk has a throwaway line of, it's time travel. Either it's all a joke or it's not real.
Right. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Okay, so standout character. You can pick two, because I've got one big one and then a soft one.
I mean, oh, boy. Why don't you tell me your two and I'll come back.
Okay. I think star of the movie for me, takeaway home, big star. This is the one, like, when I think of this movie, this is the movie.
But just so our listeners know, I'm writing it down because I'm afraid that when I agree with you, you're going to think that I'm, like, cheating. So I'm writing down my two, two here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Takeaway star of the movie.
Yes.
The person I'm now most excited to see more of.
Yes.
Nebula.
Oh, that's not who I wrote down, but that's an interesting one.
Yeah. I loved what they did with her character here.
Yes.
I thought that she was awesome. And more than any of the Guardians or any of the other movies where she felt like she was just there or just like mean.
Right.
Or like thrown in for conflict.
Oh, yeah.
Karen Gillan is an amazing actress, and like you can barely recognize her in this,
right.
in the suit, but she played this character so well, both good and bad, you know, because there's two of them. I really liked, and even like the comedy when they land the ship and it blows the Ant-Man's taco all over, and then she walks out and she just says it's like, Rhodey, watch your landing. There's an idiot on the thing.
Yeah.
And just that kind of stuff like was perfect. Set my second, my soft one, and I think it's an easy answer, is Professor Hulk. I really liked the portrayal of Professor Hulk and how easy it'll be to cosplay as him now, because you can just wear like a sweater and some dress pants,
some green paint,
and I've got the glasses already. Like I'm fine. Yeah, so those are my big two. But I have a comment about Thor, fat Thor.
Okay.
And apparently this is a controversial thing because people are calling it fat shaming or whatever. But my buddy, he texts me. And he's like, oh, man, fat Thor is my spiritual animal. He's like, finally a superhero for me. I was dying.
Well, I have a friend who's a professional athlete who was with us at the screening. Mm-hmm. Andrew was sitting next to us. And so now when you feel tired on a run, you could just say, so your buddy says, like, how was your run? And you could just say, oh, man, I'm like Endgame Thor. Are you Infinity War Thor or Endgame Thor? You know, man, I'm Endgame Thor. Okay, yeah, I mean, I like your picks. Okay. I definitely, I'm like embarrassed that I didn't think of this because definitely the Hulk character, that whole thing was fascinating. I feel like somebody, I don't think the podcast is the place to do it, but somebody needs to talk me through. I still don't really understand. In Infinity War, Banner couldn't get the Hulk to come out.
Right.
And I understand at the beginning of Endgame, he explained like, oh, I figured out how to bring it out personally and control it with this sustained exposure to gamma rays or whatever. But I still don't really understand what was going on in Infinity War that made him unable to get the Hulk out.
Yeah, I don't think they really go into it. It's more just like he lost, so he was pouting. I think that's what they allude to. Because he says, the Hulk lost, then I lost, and then I realized there had to be an in-between.
It reminded me of the Pikachu trailer, where he's like, I can't do it when people are watching.
It's exactly it.
Yeah. So my two standout characters that I wrote down, because I picked Tony Stark just because it's freaking Tony Stark to me. And again, I apologize because it's a little bit obvious, but I really felt like his whole thing with his dad and then Peter Parker and Potts, like, it just so, I felt like it was really well done. I felt like Robert Downey Jr.'s acting was on point. And obviously the whole thing is colored by the fact that I just love Iron Man. The one that I wrote down, because I thought this is what you were going to say, was Captain Marvel.
Really? Now, here's the thing. Captain Marvel, did she not feel just kind of thrown in there to you?
She did not.
Really?
Now, granted, I'll give you that she did not have as much of a role in the movie as I thought she would. Mm-hmm. She was definitely not included as sort of one of the main characters. But first of all, she kind of saves the day. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, it led me to believe that this is a character on which we can hang our hat for the next phase. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like she can carry the burden, you know, carry the load. Like, first of all, I expect another Captain Marvel. I expect her to become sort of like I don't know what the next word is going to be. Are we going to still call it Avengers, or is there like some other, like the next phase, like whatever that's going to be oriented around? I feel like she's going to be, for me, the Tony Stark of the second phase.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know if she's.
I hear what you're saying about maybe she was thrown in there, but first of all, she had a key role when you look at the plot.
Oh, yeah.
And second
of
all, I did appreciate the fact that they, again, gave the audience, you know, a little wink and a nod about when Rocket was like, where were you off getting a haircut, you know, and like that kind of thing. And I love the fact that she didn't flinch when Thor reached for his new hammer, the axe thing.
Were you surprised that the end of the stinger from Captain Marvel was not in this movie? I was.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Pager. There was no reference to the pager.
I mean, without watching Captain Marvel, there's no explanation for why she's there.
Right. That's weird.
That was weird to me.
I hadn't really thought about that. But who cares? Because we all watched Captain Marvel.
Right.
And as I said, it was a $160 million trailer for Avengers Endgame.
I'm curious to see how many people didn't see Ant-Man and the Wasp that were lost on that.
So here's a couple things that I was proud of.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm not great. I'm not you. You know,
not many people are, Pat.
I'm not Mark Ponce. I'm not, you know, I'm not as knowledgeable, but I got a few things right.
Yeah.
And one of them was I rewatched Ant-Man and the Wasp because I had a hunch that that was going to be an important part of the storyline, which it was. I also knew that Tony Stark was going to be the guy to die because I felt like that this phase started with Iron Man, and I just sort of had this idea that it had to end with Iron Man. So I was really pleased with that. I thought Ant-Man was great. I mean, that whole scene where he's in the whatever pops out of that van, and he's like holding up that sign that says, help me. And was that security guard? Was that Ken Jeong?
Yeah, it was Ken Jeong.
What?
It was great. I thought you were going to freak out because he was there.
I was. I wanted to see more of him. I thought he'd come back and have a role.
Yeah. Speaking of coming back and having a role, amazing the people they brought back for this movie. Just like minor throwaway things that you wouldn't have thought that they would have thought to bring this character back.
Speaking of that, though, were you surprised there wasn't more, or I should say any role for Nick Fury in this?
I didn't think of it because he was gone.
Right.
But he could have been in any of the previous.
Well, when they all came back in the snap, and I'm not saying he should have come back in the battle scene, but he obviously came back, and he was at Tony Stark's funeral, but isn't that pretty much the only place we saw him was at the funeral?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware. He might have been in the battle, but that's
I would have liked him to have had some.
Well, same with Maria Hill. Like, she's in the main, both he and her are in the main, I mean, he makes more sense, but she's in the main credits, like, Hoopla stuff, and she is only at the funeral that I'm aware of. I don't really care for her character, but whatever. She's just, I don't know. I don't like her in the comics either, so whatever.
So there.
There you have it.
There.
Colby Smulders. That's what I think of your character. Yeah. Some of the callbacks though were just great.
Yeah.
It's really cool. One thing I heard about that does not actually bother me whatsoever.
But it's bothered other people.
Okay, Thanos in Infinity War.
Yes.
Right? He's got five of the stones on Titan. And six-ish people are able to almost defeat him. They almost get him. You brought that up.
And the only reason they didn't was because of stupid Peter Quill.
Thanos on Earth, zero Infinity Stones, holds his own against Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, and Captain Marvel.
Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my reaction. I'm like,
maybe on the first time.
He has armor on. I don't know.
He was tired. He had been up late.
Yeah.
Have a balanced breakfast.
Right.
You know.
He just done a run.
Maybe the second time he managed his hydration better, his fuel, you know.
Right. He had his Wheaties.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't bother me nearly as much as it bothers apparently other people, but I just thought that would be interesting to bring up.
Let's talk a little bit about, and again, this is coming back a little bit to the experience part of it, but mm-hmm. I loved the battle scene when Captain America gets Thor's old hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And the place went nuts, and it wasn't just our show. I've been listening to it all weekend, hearing audience. I can tell when that scene happens because I can hear the cheer out in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
I love when they're fighting him and Thor are next to each other, and they're swinging their axes and stuff around, and they get the wrong ones. And Thor's like, here, you take the little one.
Right. <back. laughs> Yeah. That was great. Is there any significance that I'm missing to the fact that Cap got that hammer at that moment? Or was it just super cool because it was cool?
I think it was just super cool. It was cool. Like, thinking back, like, in Age of Ultron, I remember they were all, nobody could pick it up.
Right.
And then Cap pulls on it and it, like, nudges a little bit. And Thor's like, whoa! And then something happens, I think, before he gets to, like, really pick it up.
I will say, and I thought it was cool, but it was also, like, I felt like it was just a tiny bit corny, cliche. I felt like they could have written it better. The storyline where Thor goes back and reconciles with his mom,
mm-hmm.
which I love the fact that he has a line, which I've been throwing out there because it's fun to quote all the time. It says, I love you, Mom. So plain English, you know, the thunder god, all that kind of stuff. But just in plain English, he says, I love you, Mom. And then right before he goes, he, like, puts his hand out for the hammer. And the mom's like, sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah.
But then when he got it and he was like, oh, I'm still worthy. It reminded me of the Ed Helms character in Hangover when Mike Tyson knocks out the other dude. And he's like, he's still got it. I felt like... It was kind of cool, but it was obvious. Like, you could have handled it more subtly. Like, we all get the fact that Thor was feeling down on himself and needed to sort of validate his own existence. Mm-hmm. And we get that. And that, I think we were already sort of, we didn't need him to say, oh, I'm still worthy. We knew that that's what he was feeling, you know, by the scene. We didn't need him to say that. So to me, that was a little bit of a weakness, but that whole storyline with Thor, I thought was pretty cool.
I didn't get that he felt like, I agree. I knew that he was down, but I never thought that he felt unworthy.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a little like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess what they were going for.
I didn't love the fact that he never really regained his swagger.
Some people were saying to me, like, they thought when he got both of them and the lightning came down, he should have been more restored.
Right.
But at the same time, maybe that act would have been a little bit more fat shaming than the jokes.
And maybe that would have been a little too easy.
Yeah.
Some idiot like me would be on a podcast going, oh, so then he got struck by lightning and he was all back.
Yeah. Is he still, he's still chubby Thor, and like, I guess he'll be in Avengers now, or in Guardians of the Galaxy, or as Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. You know, another character that was tiny, but I really enjoyed when she was on screen was Tessa Thompson.
Yeah.
And I would love to see her I would love to see a movie about what she does with, was it Asgard? No, Odin, no. What's the name of her, the little village that she's now the king of?
I think it's New, is it New Asgard?
Yeah, New Asgard. I would watch a movie with her in the lead.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with some sort of storyline about that.
Yeah, so people were online are talking about, so you know the scene where Spider-Man's like, I don't know how you're going to get through all that. And he gives the gauntlet to Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And then all the women come out. And it's...
That was great.
It's
when
so
she's,
great.
She's not alone.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it borderline super cheesy, but then, like, what it's representing is really awesome.
Yeah.
So it's... there is a group of the female Avengers called A-Force.
Ooh.
And people were like, I wonder if this is, like, the introduction
that would be great.
Of A-Force. And it's an all-female... All-female team, and it's mostly most of those characters are on it.
Yeah.
So that could be pretty cool. I really liked Rescue in this. And Rescue is what Pepper Potts' character is called when she wears that suit. Has no aggressive. It's just defensive, like repulsor rays, no destruction.
I didn't pick up on that. That's neat.
I don't think they actually call her that, but it's the blue suit is.
I think they do because I remember. I think somebody does say, because I remember thinking to myself, who the hell's that? Oh, that's Pepper Potts.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought her suit was really cool. We need to see her around some more.
Yeah.
Well, I doubt we will. I think she is one of the actors that's does this, but doesn't really want to do this type thing. You know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So... Let's talk about one moment in the film that caused you and I to look at each other and shrug and raise an eyebrow. It was circa 1970.
What?
Yeah. On a military base. Mm-hmm. Little cab drives by or something like that, and there's Stan Lee.
Make love, not war, man.
Make love, not war, man. What do we think of that?
It was horrible. It was horrible. There was an earlier scene in the movie, and I can't even remember what it is now, where I thought it was his cameo. It was small, and it was like an old man walking by, and it's like, oh, is that Stanley?
That would have been great.
But it wasn't.
That would have been way too, like, a subtle cameo would have been a classy move, but I think we've established we don't think he's a classy dude. So...
Pensino podcast numbers go straight to the ground.
I would like someone to write me and defend him. Podcast at pensinema.com.
Please.
Now, we've discussed this on the show before. I'm not attacking his work.
Right.
Obviously. I mean, this stuff is...
It's totally personal with you.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy in his old age turned into an asshole. Mm-hmm. You know, and he... I think he became very full of himself. I mean, when you're a legend, when you're an icon like that, and again, I take nothing away. I mean, the guy left behind a legend that will live forever. I don't think that's an overstatement. I think that he's on that level of... you know, you don't want to compare like William Shakespeare, or Bob Dylan, you know, Stan Lee. But he created some characters that I think will live forever, to his credit. But I don't know what William Shakespeare was like when he was walking around Comic-Con back, you know, a few hundred years ago. And, but I just feel like he is not, in his later years, has not carried himself as up to the level that his legend would, in my opinion... respect, you know, they would dictate. So that's just my opinion, and I felt like his cameo was perfectly consistent with that of someone who, you know, had the ego to fit that.
Right.
You know, I would have loved a cameo where, like, maybe he was from a distance. You know, why couldn't he be sitting in a cafe in the background? Why does he have to even have a line?
Right.
You know, make it more like an Easter egg.
Yeah.
You know, where he's in there and somebody online has to point out to you that, hey, that third guy from the left in the back drinking the coffee, that was Stan Lee. Like, to me, that's the kind of thing, like, that would be fun, you know. But you know, and I get it, a lot of people love that, and certainly I heard in our audience people were cheering when they saw him, and to me that took me out of the movie just for a split second.
People cheered when the Russo brother was on the screen too.
I didn't pick up on that.
He was the guy who told the story of how he, in the beginning at the self-help group.
Oh, yeah.
About he went on a date.
Okay.
That was one of the brothers. I don't know which one.
I didn't get that whole scene either. That was weird.
You didn't?
I mean, I get it. I followed the plot, but I didn't. Why was that necessary?
So a bunch of people got snapped away.
Right. Thanks. Wait, what?
I think it was to show that, like, people were still struggling 5 years later with
carrying on.
Even though Captain America's there helping them, I think you were also supposed to see that not only was he struggling from carrying on from this particular thing, but that he was still struggling from carrying on from his personal trauma from 70 years in the ice.
You know, you said something a couple episodes ago that I thought was interesting that I did not agree with.
Oh, I mean, let's not start a war here.
I didn't care. I just casually didn't agree, you know. But it was a very interesting point that I think they came up again in Endgame.
Okay, hit me.
You said Thanos, as evil and awful as he is, was coming at it. He wasn't just trying to make people suffer for the sake of suffering.
Right.
Right. He wasn't. You didn't say it this way. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you weren't saying he's pure evil. He was just awful.
Right.
But he was coming at it from, in his twisted, warped, doesn't make it okay mind, he had, you know, it wasn't just suffering for the sake of suffering.
Right.
Although he certainly, you know, also had some of that in him as well. You know, right. But what I thought was interesting about Endgame was the conversation where, who was it that came in over the Bay Bridge and told Captain Marvel that I just came in over the Bay Bridge and you could see...
Captain America comes and says that to Black Widow.
Could see a pod of whales in the bay.
Yeah.
Because now there's hardly any ships, so all the pollution has cleared up, the water's clear, and Black Widow says, don't even try to tell me... What does she say? Don't even try to tell me there's an upside. Don't try to tell me to look at the bright side.
Or I'll throw this peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
I hit you in the head with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And he says, sorry, like force a habit or something like that. And then they move on with the plot right away. They don't linger on that even for a second.
Right.
But it does go to your point about Thanos, which is just for that split second, Captain America observes, hey, we humans are really screwing this place up. And if there was half as many of us,
right,
maybe the water would be cleaner, the sky would be cleaner, the grass would be greener, you know. And so I'm just saying, like, that made me think, geez, David was probably right, you know. Clearly your comment about Thanos was relevant and on the mind of the Russo brothers and the whole franchise, sort of. Like, that's one of the things that makes Thanos more interesting, is the fact that it gives his character another level of depth. And to have Captain America indirectly and accidentally and unintentionally validate the warped mindset of Thanos was really, it was just an interesting wrinkle.
Along those lines, I liked the way there's two things. One, I like the way they showed the world being semi-post-apocalyptic from the snap.
Right.
Like, trash piled up everywhere. Because, like, who's going to take care of it?
Crowded docks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, things still kind of move forward. Right. But no sports because we lost, you know.
Right.
All that stuff. But then what I was thinking on the flip side, when they bring everyone back, because it's been 5 years. My next thing is, do they have enough food to support that kind of overnight population growth? Like, okay, I know. it's too much.
Flying on the play. This is.
I'm like, are they going to deal with this in Spider-Man? I want a throwaway line. Good thing we stored all that grain. <You know? laughs> Something like that. But anyway.
Oh, that reminds me. Because as soon as you say, good thing we stored all that grain, I immediately went to the food that never gets bad, Twinkies.
Of course.
Thank God we had all those Twinkies. And that reminded me of Zombieland.
Zombieland 2 coming soon.
And that made me remember the fact that I recently saw Zombieland 2 coming soon.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
It's going to be good.
Oh, can't wait.
All right. Well, we loved Avengers Endgame, and we could talk about it for a million years, and we hope that you continue to talk about it with us whenever you see us or when you write us at podcast@pencinema.com. Moving on. We got a listener feedback here.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say another shout out, because I spoke a little bit wrong about John Oliver. The part that I was correct about was what a great guy he is. The part that I was wrong about was I said I thought he grew up around here, but I was really interested, and you'll see in a second why I think this is worth sharing. He grew up, in his words, a military brat. So he grew up on a lot of different locations. And he wrote in and told me that he played Tutankhamun at a little mini-mart on Fort Campbell Army Base in Kentucky. And I told you I played Tutankhamun in a little drugstore on Drolleman Street in Brooklyn. And turns out, small world, John Oliver's wife, who's a dear friend of mine too, she grew up in Brooklyn.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, we never knew this.
Wow.
So I just thought that was really interesting. And John was pointed out that he played his very first computer, Packard Bell from Service Merchandise, played a game called Commander Keen.
Oh, I know Commander Keen.
Just like Tutankhamun. You say you knew it? You played it?
I haven't played it, but I've seen it.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask our listeners if anyone else remembered that game. That's kind
Commander
of a fun.
Keen.
Yeah, Commander Keen. What a, like, boy, it just brings back. It's amazing how these games they haven't thought about since 1982.
Right.
Like, just they bring back so many sensations, mm-hmm. you know, emotionally and otherwise. You know, even just smells. You know, it brings back smells for me. That's neat, though. So I really appreciate John following up and letting us know about that.
Well, it's been a crazy week. What are you doing outside of the movies?
Well, I honestly, I worked as hard over the last 4 days as I have, I don't want to say ever, but I think the last time I remember working this straight through was, I don't even want to say Star Wars, I want to say summer of 06 when we were building Penn Cinema.
Oh, wow.
When I had a day job and, you know, building this place and getting started. So I have not been doing anything. I'll tell you what I have been doing, watching the credits to Endgame.
Over and over and over again.
100 times.
Wow.
And one of the great things about watching the credits is everybody stands up, whatever, and then they quick use the bathroom, and then they come back in because they want to watch a stinger. They heard on the internet there's no stinger, but they're worried that that's fake news.
Right.
So they come in, they sit back down, and they sit through the end credits, and there's like this score, and then it switches back to that old-timey music, like the Captain America music. Mm-hmm. When it switches back to that old-timey music, there's like a groan. Because they thought they were like coming to the end of the credits, and then they realized, oh my God, they just started a whole another song, and you can hear the whole audience go, oh. And then you finally get to the end, and it's the last credit, and it says Walt Disney. And then you hear Iron Man banging on his face mask, or that's what I'm assuming he's doing. And then they think this is leading into the stinger. And then the whole thing goes to black. And the cleaning lights come up. And some audiences, you can hear laughter. Like, people crack themselves up like, oh, my God, I can't believe I sat here all this time for that. And then some audiences are like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. Like, they're jerked. So that's what I've been doing, is watching credits and working. But no, we talked about this last week. What I've been watching is comfort food, The Office. Been watching a lot of The Office.
Yeah, there's not much going on for me either. I think there's no life outside of Endgame. Endgame prep, Endgame watching it, Endgame talking about it. Except for Game of Thrones. That's the only thing. So big battle tonight on Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Next week we have Long Shot, which I'm not super excited about, but I'm actually looking forward to it almost as like, you know, when you go to a fancy restaurant and they give you sherbet like before dessert, like you cleanse your palate a little bit. Like, I'm kind of ready to go to a movie where I have very low expectations, looks pretty funny. I don't really care about the plot. Like, you know, there's going to be some gags. So I'm going to watch Long Shot, and we'll talk about that next week.
So that's our topic for
Our topic next week, Long Shot. And we'll talk about that. And also, I think we'll still have a lot to talk about because Avengers grossed 350 is the last estimate I saw, if not north of that. And I've been telling people the interesting thing to see would be whether or not it can cross the 300 threshold.
Wow.
Well, it crossed. It blew right past 300. So next week, typical movie drops at least 50%. A lot of movies drop 60 or 70%, but a good movie typically drops 50%. How much does Avengers drop? So next weekend, does it gross $160 million?
Wow. It's going to be hard. I mean, so many people are seeing it. It's almost like, who's going to see it again?
Well, you've already seen it twice.
But I mean, is it going to draw that many people back?
I think it will, because I think, first of all, exactly, even the casual fans want to see it again. And second of all, there's a whole population of people who avoided the movie theaters this weekend because all they were reading about on the news was how crowded all the shows are.
Right.
So I think next weekend, I'll bet you it grosses over $150 million in its second week. In the business, we call that its sophomore frame.
Wow.
So I think $150 million sophomore frame, I think that's reasonable and freaking insane.
Yeah. Well, we want to hear what you thought about Endgame. We want to hear about what you thought of Dumbo, if you saw it showing today, one show. We want to hear it all. Podcast at PennCinema.com. You can find us there. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us basically anywhere you're going to get your podcasts. So thank you for listening. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, we'd be very grateful. Once again for the show, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum. Take care and party on.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.